there's no place like home for the holidays. And no matter how far away you roam, if you pine for the sunshine of a friendly gaze, for the holidays you can.
Welcome back to Horror for the Holidays, a Christmas horror movie podcast. I'm Jay Logsdon.
And I'm Jeff Searcy.
You know, early on, Jeff, I was thinking about having our opening tagline be a celebration of Christmas horror, because we're not just about Christmas horror movies, but we mostly are.
Yeah, I mean, that's 90% of what we do.
It's 90% of what we do. Let's get into it. Let's talk about our movie this week. I had a really difficult time with this movie, Jeff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When it popped up and it said Silent Night, I was like, oh, that's really weird.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, you told me, you messaged me, watch Silent Night. So, I mean, that's what I did. The action movie where the guy's family gets killed and he goes on the revenge spree, right?
No, not the John Woo Silent Night. I was thinking about the 2020 British heist movie Silent Night.
Okay, well, there can't possibly be a third Silent Night, right?
Actually, weirdly, there is. There's also the 2012 Silent Night Deadly Night remake, simply titled Silent Night, which is probably the closest thing that would actually be on this podcast.
I mean, did you watch that one, Jay?
I have seen that one, but not for this.
Oh, no. So I watched the wrong movie again, huh?
Did we both watch the 2021 Silent Night?
Oh, yeah, that's the one.
That's the one.
The British one. You should have said the British one. Well, actually, no, wait. There's two British ones.
The one that's not a heist movie. Because this is a very popular title. I can't wait till we get to the remake of Silent Night, Deadly Night.
If we ever get enough following, Jay, to make a movie ourselves, we should title it Silent Night.
That'd be amazing.
Add to the confusion.
Oh, man, I don't know. Seeing what Mike's going through trying to get his movie just funded has been...
Well, I mean, he was successful.
He was. Yeah, that's the big news off the top. With days to spare, he got to 60,000, and now he's well over that.
Yes, I was going to say, I believe he's probably got enough money to do some of those extra shooting days he was talking about.
So, exciting stuff for when we have Mike back on, and we'll talk about Dead Format and stuff like that.
Indeed.
Well, anyway, let's get into it. Let's deck the halls for the 2021 Silent Night, not to be confused with the 2023, 2012, or 2020 movies.
Are you talking about the AMC Plus original film, Jay?
Yep. I believe I am.
Yes, that is the one, yes. Which blew my mind, by the way. I'm like, what, AMC Plus makes movies?
And Netflix makes movies these days. I guess AMC Plus can, too.
Okay, I guess, if you're going to allow it.
Released December 3rd, 2021. Hey, great day, great.
Yes,
perfect.
Finally. They understood what they were supposed to do, Jay.
It's not like, you know, Gremlins, which came out in June, May.
You know, Christmas, May.
Right off the bat, to address the elephant in the room, I think this is technically more of a black comedy than it is like an out-and-out horror movie, but I think there are some real horror elements.
I was gonna say, I guess it really depends on what you find scary. Because some people find like these apocalyptic situations really scary, but some people are just like, yeah, whatever.
So, you know, I just want to kind of address that for people who maybe will go into this movie and, you know, or you know, decide they want to watch this movie. They're like, well, that wasn't scary. Well, it's kind of a different thing, but I guess kind of lines up with Chris Stamm's Twister.
Yeah, true.
They're, you know, maybe weather movies aren't scary, but this one, you know, but...
But it's like, I guess it really depends, because I do know some people who are really afraid of tornadoes.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And that was kind of the same thought I had for this one. Like, I agree. It's not, you know, it's not a terrifying apocalypse movie, but it is, you know, it is the apocalypse, and it's essentially a Christmas party at the end of the world.
And I'm assuming this would probably hit harder for people with children than people without.
Yeah, I think so. Written and directed by Camille Griffith, and other than a bunch of shorts, this is kind of her first full-length feature film. She was, however, the Clapper Loader and A Camera Pickups on The Phantom Menace, which is where I assume she met Keira Knightley, the star of the movie. I realized that, like, I'm just going to, every time I say her name, I'm just going to, Keira Knightley, like the Jack Sparrow song.
Jack Sparrow.
Jack Sparrow.
Disappointing that she had to start her career on such a terrible movie.
Right.
You know, maybe she got to sit next to George Lucas while he drank coffee and forgot to direct the movie.
I saw that and I was like, oh, this is probably where they met. Like, how do you get someone like Keira Knightley? How do you get someone like Keira Knightley in your movie? Oh, probably because you know each other from Star Wars Phantom Menace.
Indeed.
Matthew Good, who Jeff and I last saw in Abigail as the dad, plays the husband, Simon. Indeed. Keira Knightley plays Nell. I don't know if I mentioned she was the star. I don't think I mentioned her character's name.
And also, I was like, why the hell does this guy look so damn familiar? And I was like, oh, he's Ozymandias in Watchmen. That's why.
Yep, that was the big thing. But my wife literally like walked through it one section while we were watching the movie, and she's like, oh, that's Matthew Good. She just knew his name off the top of her head. Yeah. Didn't know it was Ozymandias. Certainly didn't know it was the dad from Abigail. But like knew him from stuff.
Wait a minute. Your wife knows people from stuff?
She's way better with faces and things in movies than I am.
When did this happen?
All three of the writer-director Camille Griffith's sons played Nell and Simon's kids, Art, Hardy, and Thomas. Hey, listeners. Editor Jay here. I realized in editing this episode that I had pronounced or said the creator's name wrong, the director's name wrong. Her name is Camille Griffin, not Camille Griffith. I apologize. Now back to the show. And the one other, I guess, person kind of right now that I want to shout out is Annabelle Wallace, who plays Sandra, was Malignant herself.
Oh, my God.
Not a movie that we might directly do for this podcast, but oh, Malignant. What a movie.
I believe she was also in the terrible Tom Cruise Mummy as well.
I think she was, too. But more importantly, Malignant.
Oh. Yes, Malignant.
Oh, man. That's another movie. You know, I mentioned that I think about Once Upon a Time at Christmas at least every day. I also think about Malignant all the fucking time.
Oh, also Johnny Depp's daughter is in this movie.
Yep. But man, that scene where Malignant throws the chair at the cop. Hilarious. Yeah,
I love it when Malignant does that.
Or when the lady falls through the ceiling and the movie completely changes its tone. God. What if you've not seen Malignant, listener, you owe yourself a favor and watch Malignant.
You should definitely watch Malignant.
It's the most bonkers theater experience I think I've had in a long time.
We can't tell you too much about it because it would ruin it, but just watch it. Trust us.
Oh, man. I don't think I saw a budget, a box office of $438,000 worldwide.
The only budget number I could find was $2 million. And that was a number that was released in a press release by AMC.
Oof. Did not make its money back at all.
Yeah. But I mean, honestly, I kind of expected it to be high because of the large name stars in it.
Yes.
So, I mean, but yes, it's impossible to tell how much it really makes because with these kind of streaming movies or whatever, it's hard to tell how many people actually watch it.
Right. Well, they try to hide how many people watch it, what viewing numbers are, stuff like that. I saw on IMDb that this movie is also known as Cha-Cha Dance.
Oh, indeed.
I just wanted to shout that out. I don't know what that means.
Also produced by Marv Studios, Matthew Vaughn's production company. He's the Kingsman guy. It's probably what most people know him from.
Okay. Oh, that's why. Yeah, that would be why that sounds familiar. Those are some fun movies.
Yes, especially the first couple.
Personal experience with this movie. I knew it was coming out. I think I was aware of it in 2021, and I think that's about it.
Jay was like, we're going to watch Silent Night. And I'm like, the action movie from 2022? Because it does take place at Christmas. And he was like, no, this is a British black comedy we're going
to
watch.
I mean, I would like to watch the John Woo Silent Night. That does look like fun. Where to watch it? Currently streaming on Netflix. You can buy a DVD copy. I bought a DVD copy, I think, at Walmart for like $5.
Nice.
A while ago. I'm sure you can't find it there, but I'm sure you can find it online for pretty cheap.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, I was looking around for a copy for myself because, spoiler, I liked the movie. And you can get them on eBay for about $7.
Well, let's get into our synopsis if you don't have anything else.
No, I think I'm good, except I just want to reiterate one more time my condolences to Camille Griffin for having to work on The Phantom Menace.
I know, yeah, sad stuff. Well, let's. I kind of made a little chart, as I do on in these bigger cast of movies, so we can kind of keep everyone straight. So our main characters are Simon and Nell. They've got three kids, Art, Hardy, and Thomas.
And more importantly, seven chickens, Jay.
There's James and Sophie. They are a couple. There is Bella and Alex. They are a couple. And then there's Tony and Sandra. They are a couple, and they have a daughter named Kitty, who's a real...
Fucking Tony.
Oh, man. Well, I think I know where Jeff's going to land on the Tony debate. I think Tony's great.
No, I love Tony. I was just kidding.
We get our opening credits as the song Christmas Sweater by Michael Bublé begins to play.
Yes. We were like, we know this is going to be a quality film now.
And just the fact that maybe most of that budget, maybe most of that $2 million budget went to getting a Michael Bublé song.
It very well could have.
We get a shot of like a big white country, like country house, as Nell kind of puts on makeup and gets ready for the party that they're going to have, watches as Simon chases a bunch of chickens around the backyard. As the song continues to play, we see Bella and Alex driving through the countryside, Bella complaining about the Christmas sweater song and about them having to be sober or their sobriety.
Yeah.
Tony, Sandra, and Danny are also driving through the countryside. Sandra touches a picture of James, calling him Prince Charming, to which Tony's like, oh, thank you, dear. So yeah, we begin to suspect that something is going on there. And then in a third car, Sophie and James are arriving, and Sophie complains about how Nell and the rest of his friends treat her, and how, like, last year they made her sit at the kids' table, and how they're very dismissive of her and stuff like that, which is a theme that will run throughout this movie. Indeed. And I think is kind of maybe the major theme of this movie. Title card as the song comes to an end. As the Christmas sweater song comes to an end.
My Christmas sweater.
Baby, put your Christmas sweater on.
Oh, yeah, if they took out the modern vehicles and the modern radio, it looks very Downton Abbey, the house, and the way they're dressed in, like, formal wear.
Yep. They continue to get ready. Art cuts himself cutting some vegetables. Simon talks about letting the chickens out and how it's better to let the foxes get them. And kind of leaves it at that.
Yes. Also, this establishes Art as a pretty cool badass when he starts swearing all over the place about cutting his hand.
Nell checks the food and complains about not having enough potatoes. And Hardy and Thomas remain upstairs playing PlayStation, which brings me to my first kind of question for you, Jeff. Do all British people just refer to video games as PlayStation?
I believe so. That seems to be, they don't make any distinction between like playing on a PC or an Xbox or an actual PlayStation.
Like I literally hear the term like watching soccer, like, oh, he's a PlayStation footballer. Yeah. And it's like, but is it actually PlayStation or are you using PlayStation for all home video game consoles?
I'm thinking they just must use it as a shorthand, kind of like they do for pop in the South where they're like, all pop is Coke.
Or like my dad thinking that like all video game consoles are Nintendos or whatever. Yep.
You're damn Nintendos all the damn time.
So yeah, that was it. British listeners, write in. Let us know if you just call all video game consoles PlayStation.
Also, something you asked at the time, Jay, which we later figured out an answer for, he bleeds all over the potatoes, but they don't throw them away.
They don't throw them away. They don't clean them up because later I was gonna bring this up. When Bella arrives, she just pops like one of the carrots into her mouth and there's clearly blood still on it.
Yep.
Oh, man.
There's something making these people just not give a shit, Jay.
Chores continue to happen as Feliz Navidad plays. We get Art throwing the chickens over the fence.
Yep.
Trying to, like, shoo them along. And the twins are up in the bath getting ready as their dad tells them no TV, no iPhones, no Googling. And most importantly, to be nice to Kitty.
Ah.
Fuck, Dad.
We have to do that last one, seriously.
Kitty, Tony, and Sandra arrive. The first thing Kitty asks for is sticky toffee pudding, to which Nell has forgotten. So Sandra tells Tony that there is a Tesco down the road, And he's like, well, what if it's closed? Then she's like, find a mallet and break the window. And then Tony like walks out the front door. Oi, Simon, you got a mallet?
Yep. He's just like, okay.
Fucking love Tony. Yeah. Bella and Alex then arrive next while Kitty goes and peeks on the twins upstairs who are still like getting done showering or getting done bathing.
Yeah.
And that she wants to watch and that her mom says that they have to be nice to her since tonight is a special occasion.
Yeah. Always good when you have to be told to be nice to somebody.
Bella then eats one of the carrots that Art bled all over and didn't clean up. She just pops it straight in her mouth.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, maybe that's just a British thing. I think it more has to do with going on in the world.
No, it's a British thing, Jay. They don't care about blood on their food.
Sophie and James arrive last, and instantly the Nell and Sandra are very dismissive towards Sophie, treating her like shit. Sandra gives James a way too long hug.
Yeah.
And then Tony and Simon arrive back at the house with the sticky toffee pudding. I almost said stiffy toffee pudding.
That's a different kind of pudding, dude.
To which Tony says he's never felt so alive, so I assume he did break the window and steal it.
Indeed.
Alex is the only one nice to Sophie. I assume it's because they are both kind of outsiders in this friend group.
Yeah, that's what it seems like.
We get another Christmas song as people are getting ready for dinner, and we get another montage of people setting the table. Art goes and, like, sets the table or, like, puts name tags out, to which Sandra then comes through and, like, I think tries to move herself closer to James, and then Art goes back through and moves them back.
Yep. That does happen.
They say grace and they don't really know kind of what to do about it. Like, they kind of meander on.
Yep.
And kind of the discussion then changes to, like, you know, oh, when we get to heaven kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, and, you know, and in God's embrace and blah, blah, blah. And it's just very strange. And this is where then Kitty, someone brings up, like, oh, did you see the Queen's speech, blah blah blah, and then Kitty's like, that doesn't really matter, she's gonna die, she's old, she deserves to die anyway. Which I mean, or the Queen especially did. But this then causes, like, Sophie to kind of take umbrage with us, and there's a discussion about you know, people deserving to die or not, and blah blah blah. And I think that's kind of the theme of the whole movie. I thought this might be a good place to kind of talk about that, and then we can kind of talk around what happens in the rest of the movie.
Well, I mean, at this point, they do bring up what's happening as well.
Yeah.
Because she's like, one of many explanations, she's like, the Russians are going to kill us all.
The Russians have sent gas over to kill us all. And then, it's more of the happening.
Yes, it's a natural phenomenon. They're saying that this is killing everybody.
Yep, the world has released this gas to kill all the people on it.
But,
as revenge for the way that the human race has, you know, raped the world, essentially.
I know it's a movie and you have to suspend your disbelief, but it makes me wonder. So, because she's like, oh, the Queen's probably, you know, in a bunker by now. And it's like, so, I mean, there's nothing saying that they couldn't filter out the gas or whatever, like from an underground, like fallout type bunker or whatever, and survive. So it's like, are there people who are going to survive this and not take the thing that's going to be offered later?
Yeah, we learned that the British government has sent out suicide pills to all citizens.
Die with dignity.
Yeah, so they can, you know, very British, stiff upper lip, you know, die with dignity sort of thing. And... you know, and that's a big point of contention for Art, who's like, well, what about the homeless people who don't have an address? You know, what about the immigrants, like, who you know, might not be registered somewhere? And they're like, and basically his parents are very dismissive of that.
Yeah, like, too fucking bad for you.
And it's, you know, and it's, it, and so, like, but Art has a good point. Like, either everyone deserves this or no one deserves this.
Right.
Because apparently the gas causes, like, essentially like Ebola like symptoms is kind of what I gathered.
It seems to cause some kind of bleeding to happen, some kind of hemorrhaging to happen, like in your brain.
Yep.
But it's hard to say based on what happens later on.
Because I think there was something about they mentioned like the liquefying of organs, which is kind of what Ebola does.
Yeah.
It's very weird. It's a very weird movie. It's
kept very vague.
But I think, to me, kind of like, I think what this movie is and kind of what I think the theme is, and I don't know what you kind of think it is, Jeff, but for me it was very, very much like kind of what Nightmare on Elm Street's theme, like real theme is. You know, the sins of the parents being passed down to the children. Like, here all these old people, all the people in charge get to make all these decisions for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's the human race's fault, especially our parents, our grandparents, our governments who, you know, pillage the earth and take mm-hmm. our natural resources, cause global warming, and then everyone has to suffer because of these choices that, you know, most of us don't deserve. We're not the ones fracking or drilling for oil. It's our, you know, it's these, you know, big businesses and shit like that. And I think that's kind of the theme of the movie.
That there's definitely some of that in there. I definitely got some the theme they were talking about, where it's like, what people deserve to take the easy way out and what people have to suffer the gas cloud. And it's like, that's a debate too, another climate change related thing you could draw, because it's like poor people are obviously going to suffer the worst,
while the rich are going to go and hide in their bunkers.
They're going to make it as good for themselves as long as they can, with like air conditioning and everything else, climate control they can afford that everybody else won't be able to afford.
Well, and, you know, once again, a thing that's in the news: the rich are building apocalypse bunkers. And, you know, their big worry is, well, how do we keep our guards loyal when money doesn't mean anything?
There's also brinksmanship in here with the whole they thinking it might be the Russians who did it or whatever thing, especially with what's going on in the world right now, where we seem to be inching closer and closer to another global conflict. It's like we continually press in Ukraine. We've got Middle East on fire as usual. We have China making moves towards Taiwan, which we're obligated to defend. So there's definitely some of that in there too. And there's also it's like, can we really trust that the people in power have our best interests at heart too? That's kind of what Art's arc is.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, how do we know that somebody hasn't made a mistake and that we're taking these suicide pills for no reason?
And it does raise like an interesting question. I did see like some debate online about that where it is interesting. Cause I felt like it was a weird movie to come out kind of post COVID time.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of have this kind of theme about, like, almost felt like don't trust the vaccine was kind of the view I got from some of the stuff I read online. And I'm like, I don't think that's what the movie's trying to say.
No, I don't think that was the theme. And from what I read, it was filmed before COVID, most of it. So I don't know if that was really the intent or not. A lot of people were saying it was like a Brexit movie, but that also doesn't really make any sense based on the themes.
But yeah, it's just a very, very strange movie that I think, because of some of the way some of the things happen, can be interpreted in a weird way. Like,
but I mean, it's good. It's not necessarily like, you have to be careful what you mistrust, I guess, would be a good message from the movie. But you should mistrust the government, because most of them do not have your best interests at heart. I would say taking everything someone tells you at face value is probably not a good way to live your life.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, just a really weird movie. And of course, Jeff and I spend the entire movie being like, oh, they get suicide pills. We've got half our country being like, no, go outside and inhale the gas.
No, that's definitely, if they'd done like a shot over into America, there would have been people, I'm sure, being like, oh, the gas is actually healthy for you.
No, it's the, you know, by hiding from the gas, you're actually letting the gas away and you need to go outside and breathe it.
Continue to shop. If you stop shopping, the gas wins.
We'd have half the country wearing like gas masks, and the other half of the country just like going out and having gas breathing rituals. Mm. And
that was also another question I had. So the government jumps right to suicide pills. Could we perhaps try gas masks or filters for the houses or something?
I agreed with that 100%. I thought that was a very strange leap to go straight to.
But I mean, that does seem like something the fucking government would do. They'd be like, well, you know, it's too much trouble to produce and distribute gas masks to everybody. Why don't we just give suicide pills out instead?
I did think it was very funny too, because I did see someone being like, oh, it's a population control movie, you know, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. And I'm like, but they're killing off rich, affluent people they're letting the poor and the immigrants survive. They know the gas doesn't kill people.
The only kind of population control movie I could see this being would be like an Alex Jones-esque one where it's like they're trying to kill off all the stupid people and leave the people smart enough to see through their ruse alive.
But like, but the gas clearly does kill people. Like, we see that in the movie.
Well, I mean, we never actually see the gas kill anybody. We just see news reports that the gas has passed over this area. But we don't know.
Doesn't the gas kill the people in the car?
They're dead, but he says, I don't know if they took their pills or if they died from the gas. So that's fair. Like, no one knows.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just a really weird movie.
They leave it so ambiguous in this movie. That's one of the things I like about it is it's like no one ever dies from the gas on screen. But I don't think we actually see anybody die from the pill on screen either. So it's kind of like, yes, these people are all dead, but did they kill themselves or did they get killed by the gas?
Oh, but yeah. Anyway, they continue through the night. They give out Christmas presents to each other.
Oh, my God. A very uncomfortable, awkward scene with Kitty and the doll.
Yeah, like they bought Kitty like a doll that kind of looks like her.
And talks like her.
Yep. Yeah. But then also Kitty's like really upset. You couldn't have bought me more because it comes out that Sandra bought a really nice dress with Kitty's college fund because she knew the world was ending.
Yeah. Well, and the awkward moment I was talking about was she hugs her dad, but, like, refuses to hug her mom.
Yep. I mean, her mom fucking sucks. Sandra sucks.
I know Sandra sucks, but usually kids don't, you know, kids usually don't see that about their parents. It's like she's so bad, even her own daughter doesn't like her.
Yeah, pretty much. We then kind of, Art kind of, I think, throws, like, a big kind of tantrum at this point. And this is kind of the thing that we were talking about where Art's, you know, very much like, why are you guys acting like we don't understand what's going on?
Yes.
You know, once again, a thing where adults love to talk down, you know, the older generations love to talk down to the younger generations. Yes. No, we have just as much skin in this game, if not more than you do. Mm-hmm. Like, be honest with us. Stop trying to act like we don't know what's going on.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's another theme of this movie. Could also be the constant downplaying of real emergencies and the constant upplaying of things that don't matter.
Yep.
Because they act like this Christmas party is super important and we have to get this done and we have to get together and give gifts and things. Where literally, the world is dying outside.
Yep. And they have basically a suicide pact that they're all gonna commit suicide together, which Sophie has not agreed to. And there's a whole thing that will come from that.
Yes, it's like rather than just accepting what's actually going on and spending some nice quality time together as a family at the end, they choose to pretend like nothing bad is happening, even to the point where they're on the phone with their grandma as she's getting ready to take her suicide pill and die as the gas cloud is approaching her, and they're just like, oh, she's fine. I'm sure she just had to take another call.
Right. Oh, my God.
It's like they all know what's going on. Why are we continuing this farce?
Sandra lets slip that basically because it's the end of the world, she wants to sleep with James.
Mm-hmm. Which pisses Tony right the fuck off.
Yeah, Tony gets really upset about that. But then it comes out that at some point, Tony had slept with Bella.
Yes.
Which saved his and Sandra's marriage.
Yes.
And then, like, everyone's, like, really grossed out that not that Bella slept with Tony, but that Bella slept with Tony.
Yes, Tony. Tony, disgusting fucking Tony, really?
Poor Tony.
I know, I felt bad. The two characters I sympathize most with in this movie are Tony and Art.
I think Sophie, too. She's
Oh, yeah, she has to make a Sophie's choice, Jay.
I mean, she does, yes. I think that was very on the nose. Yes. But yeah, it turns out that Sophie's pregnant. She doesn't want to take the pill because she's also convinced that maybe, you know, she can survive. You know, we don't know what the gas does. We don't know if we don't know how people will respond to it, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of continues on. Alex gets drunk, and basically passes out in the bedroom, which once again, Alex and Bella were supposed to be sober, but it's the end of the world. I'm going to get drunk. Like,
exactly.
And so she gets drunk and falls asleep, to which, like, you know, Bella kind of gets upset about that. You know, we were supposed to do this together, and now we're not going to do it together.
Yep.
But I think even, like, as Alex falls asleep, she's like, or as she passes out, because I guess that's more what you do when you're drunk.
Yeah.
She's like, well, I couldn't stand being around your horrible friends anymore.
Yep.
Which I 100% agree with.
Yes, as I say, this was bad end of the world choice.
The majority of these people fucking suck. So then we kind of move on with the movie. Some of the things Jeff and I have talked about happen, you know, they make a phone call, Sophie reveals that she's pregnant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. At some point they continue to kind of dismiss Art and dismiss his concerns about these things, to which Art then runs out of the house. And this is where he comes across that car that Jeff and I mentioned, where there's a bunch of people that are dead in it.
They're both, whole family is dead, including a baby, and there's a bunch of open pill packets on the seat.
But also the gas cloud is around them, so we don't know if...
But I'm guessing they took the pills because the packets are open on the seat.
Right.
But, I mean, it's possible they didn't, but...
But, and so he, Art kind of runs out and sees this, and then the gas cloud approaches him, which kind of also looks like a tornado.
Yes, it's a Chris Dams twister.
And it comes up behind him and gets him. Just like Chris Dams twister.
Chris Dams twister stalks your family.
And Simon's able to run out and grab him and pull it back in. But, like, Art starts convulsing and bleeding out, hemorrhaging out of his eyes and stuff like that.
Which also makes me wonder, well, he's a fine at first. I think he bleeds out of his eyes when they look at him later when he's laying on the bed. But I was also like, so how did Simon survive going into that area to get him, too?
Yeah,
that's
I don't know.
That's also weird.
I think because, like, Art was, like, I don't know, like, Art was maybe kind of running out of it. It's very strange.
But it's like, if the gas is close enough to get him, it should have got Simon, too.
So they all get back into the house. Everyone kind of takes their pills. Bella's really upset that Alex is asleep or passed out. Yes. So she tries to, like, put the pill in her mouth and then dump it down her throat.
She makes her swallow it, but then she wakes up and throws it up.
Yeah. And so like, Alex thinks she just threw up, but Bella's already taken her suicide pill. Yep. So the Christmas sweater song plays, and they're kind of, like, dancing in the kitchen. And then Bella stabs Alex in the stomach with the knife.
And she's like, why? And she's like, you threw up your pill, you daft bitch.
And then, like, they both fall over and die. Tony, Sandra, and Kitty had all taken their pills. And then Kitty realized she left her doll, like, somewhere. So she runs off to get it, and her parents die while she's in the other room.
And another awkward as hell moment, her mom begs for a hug before she leaves the room, but she won't do it.
Which is, oh my gosh, ridiculous. Sophie decides to take the pill, and so she and James die, and then Simon's getting ready to have all the kids take their, or have everyone else take their pills. We've watched Art convulse and hemorrhage out his eyes and stuff like that, and then so he goes downstairs, and then, like, he gets them, like, a can of Coke for the twins. And so, like, pours some and then pours some of the other. And then one of them's like, oh, he has more than me. Yeah. So Simon has to go back downstairs.
Oh, motherfucking kids.
With the gas approaching the house, they're all going to die. And then, like, has to even out so they have the same amount in both their glasses. Very much a thing a parent would probably have to do.
Yeah. And at this point, Kitty returns to her parents' room and they're both dead. She crawls up between them and finally hugs her mom.
Yep. That was very sweet.
Yep.
And then, so they all take their pills. They all die. We then get this very, like, pastoral scene. Snow has now fallen on the ground.
It's almost like, is it snow or is it, like, radioactive fallout? I was almost wondering.
My thought was, like, because they kind of talk about snow as, like, a blank canvas kind of thing. Like, oh, it's kind of like a rebirth kind of, like thing. Like, it's a new world. There's snow all over.
There's, like, a haunting, like, operatic version of Silent Night that's sung over the empty fields and the empty house with all the dead bodies.
Yeah, and the camera starts kind of going to all these different bodies laid out throughout the house. And then it kind of pans in on Art, who, you know, has all the blood on his eyes. And it slowly starts to pull, like, pan in on him. As his eyes open, he takes a breath. As the Silent Night song really starts to swell up.
And end credits.
And we get a reverse of the mist.
Yep. A reverse mist. He survived and everyone else died.
I think the whole time I was like, as this is building up, I'm like, it's going to be a fucking reversed mist, isn't it? Sure enough, it was.
Like, halfway through, I started telling Jay, I was like, he's going to live. He's going to be the only one that lives.
And he was.
Yep. This is what listening to Alex Jones gets you. Survival. And bone broth.
And getting your podcasting studio taken away.
He drank so much bone broth, Jay, that he was able to survive the gas.
where do we want to go for our minutiae so we can kind of get into our discussion?
We might as well talk about the quotes first.
All right. Christmas Carol. Favorite quotes.
This has got some great lines in it. So many people online were like, this is fucking boring. I'm a big stupid idiot and I thought it was boring. It's not boring. It's funny pretty much throughout the entire thing. It grapples with some things. I know why people say this is boring, because it makes them think and feel things they don't want to have to think about.
There, I didn't write the lines down, but like, no, I mean, I'm laughing throughout this movie. It's just like, yes, there's very serious, like very like heartfelt moments, but then also, you know, it's intercut with, you know, the kids complaining about, you know, one having more Coke than the other. Mm-hmm. Or there's like a scene where, you know, it's supposed to be this nice night, you know, Art, did you call Kitty a cunt? And then like Bella's like, I mean, she is, right? And then later on, it's like, oh, you know, and then like shortly after that scene, it's like, you know, I think Sandra's then like, Art, don't be such an asshole. And then Nell's like, yeah, it kind of is, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty close, yeah. So Art says, Art's talking about how everything, they may be wrong or whatever. What if a scientist was wrong and the gas cloud isn't deadly? And I think it's James that's like, that's just not possible. People don't make mistakes like that. I'm like, oh yeah, people never make mistakes. But Art's response is, that's just what people say when they don't want to find a solution.
Early on in the movie, a lot of my quotes are from very early on in the movie. I'm coming. Did you find the plaster? Nell, this is after Art cuts himself and bleeds all over the carrots. Art, no. Nell, did you bleed on the carrots? Art, really, Mom? Will I die? Nell, yeah, probably.
Related to that same conversation I just talked about, Art says, people don't generally know they've made a mistake until they've made it, and then we'll all be dead, and there'll be no one to apologize to.
Tony slams the hatch while Sandra's doing her makeup in the car, and so it causes like her like lipstick to like move. Oh, for fuck's sake, Tony. Sandra. Then Tony goes, yes, darling. Classic Tony.
Yeah, I love Tony.
Classic T-Bone.
I wasn't sure who this was attributed to, because I didn't write it down, but it's, I'm not kind, I just don't want to give up, but I don't think anyone else should either. I think it's Art, but I'm not sure.
It might be Sophie.
Could be Sophie. One of those two, definitely. They're the only two that I even have a hint of optimism in this movie.
Yep. Kitty gives Nell some flowers, and Nell says, they're beautiful, thank you. And then Kitty goes, Sandra picked them from the neighbor's garden. It didn't take very long. And then Nell, oh, okay, lovely. I don't know why, I just thought the line delivery was really good.
When they tell Art that he has to do it or whatever, he doesn't have any choice. And he's like, that's not fair. And his dad's just like, life isn't fair.
I tell my kids that, yes, all the time.
I always love that when parents drop that in a movie.
And then the last one I have, besides, you know, there are tons of other lines that are good. These are just kind of some of the ones that I really liked. Art, shut the fuck up, Kitty. We all know you're full of shit.
Yeah. I think it's Tony when they're putting batteries in a radio so they can listen to the news about the cloud. And Tony's like, the batteries are going to last longer than us.
No, that was a good one.
And I believe it's Bella who said, they're like, so what is your problem, when they're all talking to each other in that like fireside chat scene where they reveal that Tony's wife is obsessed with James and all that. She's like, I've just noticed posh people like keeping secrets.
There's a couple lines like that, like throughout the movie. And I think that even at one point, like someone's like, I'm not posh, I'm flat broke. Like,
oh, and James, James is the resident doctor/scientist. And he's like, pain is why some people choose to die. And I'm like, wow, damn, if you could choose to die because of pain, sign me up.
Well, moving on, if you don't have any other quotes.
No, I think that's good for me.
All right, let's do Christmas wrapping. Set design, costuming, stuff like that.
They had some good costumes. Very, like I said, Downton Abbey formal wear for a lot of them.
I was very posh, like, yes. Which, once again, kind of coming back to that word.
Set decorations, pretty good. I mean, there's some Christmas decorations around the house. The nice Christmas tree, like at the bottom of the staircase. We both mentioned, it's like, it's England. I want some snow on the ground.
Which we do eventually
but
get,
yes,
like we
at the
mentioned,
very end but... of the movie, yeah. But it's like, I wish there would have been some around. Because, you know, it just, it kind of cuts the Christmas feel a little bit when it's all, like, disgusting outside. But we do live in Iowa, so we've had disgusting, dirty Christmas before.
Yeah, quite a few times, especially lately. Yeah. I do want to say, while we did shout out, you know, everyone looks very posh. Like, all the boys are wearing tuxes and shit like that, which I think a lot of it is implied was either stolen or
yeah.
James just looks cool as shit. Like, he's just, like, one dapper dude. Like,
yeah.
I can understand why Sandra wants to destroy her marriage to sleep with James. He's
Prince Charming.
He's a suave looking motherfucker.
Yeah, you know who I think's a suave looking motherfucker, Jay?
Tony.
I
mean, I don't understand why Sandra would want to get rid of Tony, but I can understand why she'd want to get with James.
Indeed, sir, indeed.
I will, however, say, man, the gas cloud looked stupid as shit. Real bad CGI.
That was one of the worst things in the movie, yes, was the depiction of the gas cloud.
Like, there were some scenes where it looked kind of really neat and really cool, and other scenes, it just looked really, really bad.
Yeah.
It looked like sci-fi level, like, apocalypse movie.
When the grandma looks out her window and she can see it coming towards her, that was very, like, yes, sci-fi movie of the week. the cheap tornado CGI going out there.
The Chris Stamps Twister going on outside
the
windows.
God. It was very Chris Stamps Twister.
Oh, man. What a film.
But, I mean, essentially, it's, what do they call these, chamber films?
Yeah.
Where it all takes place in one location.
Bottle episode kind of feel.
Yeah. But, yeah, basically, it all takes place in a big manor house, which is decked out for Christmas to a certain extent. I would say not at, like, a ridiculous level, like, you know, Jay and I like, where it looks like Santa threw up all over the house, but...
I think you, maybe we didn't say it on the episode, but we were, when we were talking about it, like, we were getting ready to watch it, I don't think we mentioned it on the In a Violent Nature episode. It felt very, like, the children meets, like, White Doomsday.
Yes, we did. We both, afterwards, we agreed as well. It does seem like a mashup of those two concepts.
And, like, while The Children is kind of an apocalypse movie in its own way, it's also very limited to a manor house in rural England. Mm-hmm. You know, very much like this movie is, you know, a lot of that same thing, but, you know, a much bleaker, I think, apocalypse than kind of the, we don't know what's going on and our children are slashing us.
Indeed. And if it sounds like it's hard for us to focus, it's because Noble is continually blasting horribly stinky gas in our face, simulating the gas cloud for us.
Yeah, we got our own gas cloud in here. My dog's got a he's got some farting issues.
He's got something going on down there. But yes, it helps us get in the mood for the episode because we're breathing poison gas while we're trying to record this.
All right. Well, Christmas spirit. How Christmassy is the movie? How Christmassy are the kills?
The kills are not very Christmassy. Suicide pills, not very Christmassy.
I will say there's one very Christmassy kill. Singing a Christmas song as you stab your partner.
I suppose, yes, that would be one Christmas kill. But the rest of them, yeah, not very Christmassy.
Not at all.
And as far as Christmas theme of the movie, I would say it's going to fall in the middle of the scale for me.
I think it's a little higher than some of the other ones we've had. Oh, yeah. Like, I think it's higher in Christmas, but yeah, it's not the Christmas threw up everywhere. It's not Black Christmas 2006. No. It's not Christmas Evil. It's not Letters to Satan Claus level of Christmas in every scene.
There's Christmas in the movie, and there's a few Christmas-related activities going on, but Christmas is not really the crux of the movie. It's more of an excuse for people to get together.
Yep. Which, I mean, yeah. It is very much an awkward Christmas family get-together.
Yes. Well, which brings me back to a tagline, one of the many taglines for the movie, because there were like six. But the tagline I saw that made me think of what you just said was, looks like surviving Christmas just got a little harder.
That is a good one. I was looking to see if it's on the front of the DVD, which the one on this one is, here's to the end of the world.
Yep. That was another one. That was on a poster I saw. But yes, interesting taglines for the movie. But yes, Christmas is going to fall firmly in the medium for me.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, because we gave, I think, Bikini Bloodbath Christmas, like, a medium.
Mm.
And, like, I think it's more Christmassy than that. but it's far from the most Christmassy movie we've had.
No, it's like, you know what time of year it is, but at the end of the day, you could set this any time, any place, and it wouldn't really change the movie.
Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, you could set it a bank holiday weekend, or you know, New Year's, or any other British holiday.
Guy Fawkes Day.
The Queen's dog's birthday. I think that's a holiday they have there.
All Hallows Eve.
Oh, that's a great holiday. You mean the Spooktacular.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah. Our Spooktacular is also an official British government holiday.
Yeah, they get the whole month of October off, I've heard, because of the Horror for the Holidays Halloween Spooktacular.
Yes, they do, Jay. And in fact, they also get St. Patrick's Day off because of the banning of Uncle O'Grimacy.
Oh, that legend. Oh, we tip our hat to Uncle O'Grimacy.
I tip my ridiculously small cap to Uncle O'Grimacy.
Oh, sure. All right. Well, let's go on to Broken Bulb, Brilliant Bulb. One thing you want to fix, one thing you want to praise. Jeff, you go first.
All right. Broken Bulb, for me, I was debating on whether it was Add More Christmas or Add More Explanation. And I think, honestly, I'm going to settle on the Add More Explanation. I wish there had been just a little bit more background information about what was going on. Because you know so little about what's going on that it almost makes it hard to care about it at some points. Because no one ever dies from the gas on screen. There's no confirmed gas kills in the movie. And it just kind of... I wish there was a definitive answer one way or the other. Is this thing a deadly plague that's destroying the earth and killing everybody it touches? Or is it like overhyped nonsense?
No, I kind of agree with you. I kind of had that same thought. Like, I would like more information about kind of what's going on in this movie. Like, because I do think that this poison cloud is killing people. But yeah, you can read it kind of multiple ways. Yeah. And I think that leads to, while that does lead to, you know, some good debate and some good discussion, it also leads to some weirdos being weird on the internet about this movie.
It's almost too ambiguous, I would say. I like ambiguity in a movie, but I need something at least to, you know, hold on to as like a theme for the movie, because at the end of the movie, Art, we already said, he wakes up. So it's like, so was the entire movie pointless then? Was their entire debate, did it mean nothing?
Right. Like, yeah, because like there was a thing I saw where someone was like, oh, it's, you know, it's about, like I said, it's about population control. But I'm like, but if it's about population control, why are you killing the rich people? Why are you killing the affluent people and not the homeless and the immigrants?
Because, Jay, the Bilderbergs and the New World Order based under the Denver International Airport, Jay, they want us to kill everyone that's not smart enough to comprehend their plan for humanity.
Like, because, I don't know, I think that the gas does kill people. I just think that Art didn't get, like, a full lung full of it or whatever.
I mean,
like, he took, like, one gasp of it. And so, you know, it caused something, but yeah, he didn't get enough of it. And maybe like maybe the gas will come back through and kill him later. You know, maybe Art's going to have to figure out how to survive now that the entire world's dead.
That raises another question. It's like, if limiting your exposure will help you survive it, then there would have been ways for people to survive by like sealing themselves in chambers without access to the outside.
Right, exactly. Which, yeah, comes back to, you know, could we have done something else?
Well, I mean, that's another theme that I like about this movie. You could just chalk this all up to government incompetence and laziness of the people. It's like, well, there's a really easy way we could solve this problem that would hurt a lot of people, or we could solve it in a way that would be more inconvenient for us but would lead to more people surviving. I'll take the easy suicide way, please.
Yeah.
I could easily see that happening in real life.
I certainly do think this is a very like British movie, like stiff upper lip.
Yes.
You know, keep calm and carry on kind of thing.
Solve a problem. I don't know, what if we all just died with dignity?
One other thing I would have liked to have seen, and you and I both kind of mentioned this, is off the air, is I would have liked to have seen maybe like a Dawn of the Dead style, not like a raiding team, like at the end of the Dawn of the Dead, but like a kind of like people kind of come to maybe kind of loot.
That was the main thrust of my Broken Bulb, was more outside influence on this like small group of people we get to see. Maybe, yeah, some people show up that are like, we're going to raid your posh house or whatever for whatever it's got because the world is ending.
And like, you don't have to have them fight them off. You just have to like make sure people are like barricading the doors properly and stuff like that.
just have them like taunt them from inside or whatever. Yeah. Like, well, we got here first, idiots.
No, exactly. Like, I think I would have liked something like that. That would have been maybe been a little more fun.
And just a little bit more information, because the kids obviously ignore their parents and they go right to Google and see what's going on online or whatever. And it's like, it would have been nice to see a little bit more about what was going on in other places besides just England. Like I said, a nice scene of Americans like outside huffing the gas would have been nice.
The guy takes, I just breathed the gas and I'm fine. And then his eyes start bleeding and his insides liquefy.
It'd be amazing if he's like talking to a reporter and he drops dead in frame behind her.
10 out of 10. I would have loved that.
Something like that, yeah. But okay, so that's my broken. You want to do your broken before I do my brilliant?
Mine was the same thing. Oh, was so kind of what
we were in agreement on that. All right, so my brilliant bulb was funny from start to finish. Such an entertaining movie to watch, even though it's dealing with super heavy themes. And obviously, you could draw comparisons to any number of real world things going on, but they kept it upbeat enough with like the weird comedic timing, which apparently is just a British skill, because I don't really see any kind of like dark ironic humor like this done by anybody else. Doesn't seem to work as well for whatever reason, but I mean, it was very entertaining and we had a lot of fun speculating about it as it went on. And then every once in a while, you know, you'd have one of those really funny moments, like them breaking the window at the Tesco for the pudding or whatever. Or Art would go off on one of his profanity-fueled tirades out of nowhere. That was always great. And I love the fact that they were able to make an entertaining movie about people basically making the choice to commit mass suicide, which is weird to say. It doesn't sound like it's something that would be entertaining.
Right. No, exactly. Yeah, no, it is. they found a way to make that funny, which it doesn't seem like it should be possible.
Yes, it does not seem like it should be. But I think part of the reason that it is funny is because you can see so many parallels to things that are actually happening in the world, where we're basically committing like a slow motion suicide.
It's also it's equal parts like funny, but then also like kind of heartwarming and touching at moments.
There are emotional moments that will catch you off guard because of the comedic tone of a lot of the movie, whether it's like, you know, existential dread at what's about to happen, like when the kids have to be on the phone with grandma when she decides to end her life. And there'll be like weird funny moments that'll pop out of nowhere, like them all being disgusted, not by the fact that Tony slept with another woman other than his wife, but the fact that she would sleep with Tony.
Bella, why would you sleep with Tony?
Exactly. Like, Tony's like some scumbag. And he seems to be just a perfectly normal, nice guy, but whatever.
No, it does manage to be like very, very funny, but also be very like it does have kind of that Christmas like coming together, even though it's a twist on that in a way.
I would say it has while the tone is like inconsistent between scenes, it has a consistent tone overall, which is the fact that these people are choosing to have like one last good time together before the end of the world. Which I think it's a hard line to walk, I think, because they could have easily made this too silly and then you wouldn't take it seriously, or they could have made it too dark and then it would just be a long, depressing slog.
Right.
I think it walks the balance of funny and serious perfectly.
Now, once again, you and I are kind of in agreement. The comedic timing, especially by Tony, Rufus Jones, and Bella Lucy Punch, they are just the funniest fucking people in this movie. And I think they probably both have history, you know, acting in British comedies. I think I've seen Rufus Jones in something before. Mm-hmm. And Lucy Punch sounds like a familiar name. Like, I didn't shout them out at the beginning because I think they're, you know, and that's not really what we do. We try to highlight, you know, actors that we'll see again or really big
famous
names.
People, yeah.
But I've seen these two in, like, British shows before, and mostly comedies, because that's mostly what I British stuff that I watch. And they're hilarious in that, and they're hilarious in this. And I think they're like you said, their timing, their comedic timing is so damn good, and their line delivery, just that dry kind of British humor.
Yeah, it definitely balances the movie out, because otherwise this would just be a long, bleak, depressing slog of people trying to pretend everything's all right when everybody knows it's not.
We've been mostly in agreement, so let's move on to our final segment, or I guess let's move on to our final ratings. Every episode of Horror for the Holidays, we like to rate our movie on one of three categories. Is it ho 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 hilarious? Is it seasonally scary? Or is it you'll be sorry? Jeff?
It's seasonally scary for me. And it's one of those things that's not like viscerally scary. It's not like, you know, something pops out and goes boo. It's more of like an existential horror. And I think the more you understand about what's going on in the world, the more scary it will be to you as you draw parallels to things happening. Like I always like to tell my wife when I'm prepping for the apocalypse. She's like, there's not going to be any apocalypse. This is stupid. And I'm like, yeah, says everybody before the apocalypse. But no, seasonally scary for me, definitely. This is worth checking out. I mean, you can stream it on Netflix. I mean, most people buy Netflix at least 1 or 2 months out of the year to check out what's going on. So when it's your Netflix month, throw this on. It's like 90 minutes, right? It's not too long.
Yeah, it's not too long.
So, I mean, it's entertaining. You'll enjoy it. You might ask yourself some questions. But if you're dumb, don't watch it, because then you'll go online and go, it was the boring movie.
Now, after you're done watching the latest season of Bridgerton and seeing Lady Featherington's boobs, you can put on Silent Night, I guess. My wife likes Bridgerton, so
I also want to highlight the fact that my wife is like, okay, so you like this movie, but you also like Bikini Bloodbath Christmas, and I'm like, yes, I like both of these movies.
You're a complex individual, Jeff. Yes,
I have multifaceted character. Okay. I'm not an NPC.
God damn it. I gave this movie a hilarious. Because as this has kind of bared itself out, I think it's shown that like Jeff and I have kind of different definitions of what those things mean, yes. Which is perfectly fine for you know, this is our podcast, these are our beans. So, you know, we could have different, it's what hilarious, seasonally scary, or you'll be sorry mean to you.
Yes.
To me, this movie's hilarious. It's a comedy. I mean, it's laugh out loud at times. There's hilarious line delivery, you know. There's parents being parents to their kids, and it, you know, and I've felt those exact emotions like multiple times before. You know, the other day, like my son was like teasing my youngest daughter, and I literally just like yelled down the hall like, as she was like kind of like throwing a fit about it, I was like, just punch him. You hit him once and it'll be over with. Like,
yeah.
And like, that's kind of how, like, I felt a lot of the things that like the parents felt early on in the movie. Yeah. And have like related to a lot of those moments. And certainly, and yes, it's very heartfelt. It's very touching, and it's very poignant. And I do think there's a lot of discussion that can be had about this movie. And I think we've done kind of a good job talking about that. And you know, and I do think there's a big kind of scary theme underneath.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, the movie's fucking funny. Literally talking about how you hate a Christmas song. The Christmas song comes back on the radio, and your partner has just puked up the suicide pill that you force fed them. So now you have to stab them in the stomach and apologize because all the suicide pills are now gone.
Yep. And that's about the size of it.
Like, just fucking hilarious. Like, I was laughing. And then even, you know, Art opens his eyes at the end of the movie and I started laughing again. Yeah. Because
reverse mist.
It's one of those reverse mists you hear so much about.
So basically what you're saying, Jay, is the real ratings are the friends we made along the way.
Yeah, probably. Well, Jeff, it's time to take this apocalypse and see where it ranks among other apocalypses on our naughty list.
It depends. If the gas really does kill people, then I'd say it's probably at least as deadly as the White Doomsday apocalypse.
I see. That's the thing is art survives,
right.
but I do think it does kill people.
So it's like,
so I would say it's a little less than White Doomsday, but probably better than the children.
Because I mean, there are survivors in White Doomsday, just not very many. So I'm wondering how many people survive the gas if they're exposed to it. That would really be the determining factor.
Yeah.
Since we don't know that, though, I think we're going to have to rank it below White Doomsday.
Yeah, I think below White Doomsday, but maybe above the children. Yeah,
I would say above the children, just because we don't know that the children is taking place anywhere but England. So, I mean, it could be a localized thing to the British Isles.
Maybe all those kids are just sick and tired of fucking Armistice Day and all these weird bank holidays, and we need to kill our parents.
Yes, that could be very well be true, Jay. So yeah, I think that's a good spot for it.
I agree. And they're like, man, we have to have these. We have to have the. We get a day off school because the queen died.
Ah, lame.
Bank holiday. All the footies put on pause because the queen died. Fuck this bullshit. Let's all rebel and kill our parents so we can just have the regular footy on.
And since the king is ancient, you're probably going to get a king day off soon, too.
I'm sure they will. Have you seen his weird hands?
Yes, I have. He's got Mitch McConnell hands.
Also, the fucking, that fucking portrait. I know people were, like, being weirdos about it. I thought that portrait was the most badass thing I've ever seen.
No, it was a good portrait.
If I was going to get a portrait of British royalty, which, you know, I'm not, one, I'm not a monarchist, and two, I'm American. That's why we fought in 1776 or whatever.
Jay's like, that's why we fought in World War II to leave England.
Yeah, that's that's me. I would absolutely buy a large poster of the king with that fucking red background and shit. That was cool as heck.
No, I would definitely. It was very Emperor Palpatine. I liked it.
All right. Well, anyway, Jeff, you know what? As we mentioned at the top of the episode, Dead Format did get funded.
It did.
And on one of Mike's live streams, I asked him a question. And
oh no,
it's time for another Fuck, Marry, Killmas. The Game Master returns.
Oh no, the Game Master's back.
Sorry, fuck, marry, Killmas.
Every time.
All right, Jeff, I gotta know. This was the question I asked to Mike.
Oh boy.
Fuck, marry, Killmas. Angel, Jose Maria, and Kavan. The Day of the Beast crew.
Oh no. I mean, I gotta marry Jose Maria. That's right out the top. I gotta spend more time with him. Ooh, this is getting difficult. I gotta kill Angel. I think that's the way it's gotta go.
You're gonna fuck Kavan?
Yep, I guess.
So Mike's rating was, because I asked Mike, I believe he was going to kill Kavan, fuck Jose Maria, and marry Angel.
Okay.
And I'm like, but I think Mike is discounting. Kavan knows how to fuck. Yeah. Like, I mean, he got that hot blonde lady in the movie.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, he obviously has a lot of sex. Jose Maria has none. So, I mean, that's why we're going to get married.
And Angel has also had no sex because he's a priest.
But he's way too annoying to have around. I just couldn't stand that shit.
But I think, like, man, it's a tough one.
And no, I had to seriously ponder that one, Jay. I was not expecting that to think so hard at the end of this episode.
Yeah, this is the hardest one because it's like, I love all three of these boys. Like,
yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't want to kill any of them, really, but if I have to kill one, it's going to be Angel.
I mean, maybe Angel die. I mean, I guess, I don't know. Man, it is tough. I think, oh man, I'd probably fuck Jose Maria so he would get some for once. And I think, even though I think Kavan would be wild, I think I have to side with Mike. I think I'd have to marry Angel because he's just such a sweet guy. Where Kavan, like, I mean, yeah, that dude knows how to fuck, but I mean, I would just feel bad for Jose Maria dying without ever getting any.
Jay Logson's like, Kavan fucks, I guarantee you.
Kavan fucks. I mean, canonically, I'm pretty sure he does. All right, well.
Are we gonna do our garbage day?
Oh, yeah. It's time for a little segment we like to call garbage day.
Okay.
Garbage day sound effect.
Garbage day.
Garbage day! Huh? No!
Oh, God, he's got the cooler.
All right, well, Jeff, I teased it on the last episode.
No, no.
You know, there's three new seasonal Mountain Dews out for the 4th of July.
Oh, Lord.
A fourth one if we decide to make a trip back up to Speedway.
Yes, we got to make a trip to Speedway and try that Infinity Dew.
A fifth one? There's five. There's two at Speedway /7-Eleven, right?
Mm, yes. Well, there's a Slurpee of, I believe, of the Infinity. Or no, it's a Slurpee of the Red, White, and Blue Dew. And then there's the Infinity Dew that's the exclusive Dew to there.
So if you guys want to hear a story about, listeners, if you want to hear a story about Jeff and I trying to go back up to Speedway,
yes,
let us know. Leave a comment. We'll make another trip up to Minnesota. So far, I've had some trouble locating all the dues.
Yes.
As they've slowly populated stores, I'll find a store and like it'll have the sign up, but doesn't have any of the dues. I'll find a store that has one of the dues, but doesn't have, you know, any signage or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it is, I think it is slowly popping into stores more. I was in a Casey's the other day. They had the sign, didn't have any dew.
Nice.
Stopped at another Casey's. They did have the Dew. So here, we're going to try the one I could find. The white one. Dew Freedom Fusion. Dew with a blast of lemonade and peach flavor with other natural flavors.
The freedom of it all.
So there's three of them. There's a red one, a white one, and a blue one. I think for the Dutch flag.
Yeah.
For the flag of the Netherlands.
I think that's what it is. Or no, I think it's for the Union Jack, Jay, celebrating England.
Oh, yeah. They knew how much we were going to love Silent Night. And they're like, we're going to put out red, white, and blue Dew to cover commemorate that.
Well, I say, I think Scotland's flag is blue and white, right?
And it, so the Union Jack
incorporates all of them, right?
Incorporates all the flags, yeah.
Wales, well, Scotland, Wales, and England. I don't think it incorporates Ireland's, right?
I think it did originally, but then Ireland and Northern Ireland left.
Okay. I don't want to get any of my British lore wrong, Jay, or there'll be some fucking British guy in the comments going, "Oi, you fuckers don't know nothing!
Oi, four birds is enough for one night! Hey,
four birds!" Yeah, we don't want four birds Santa paying us a visit.
Well, it's like a white Dew, very reminiscent of like Whiteout, which I was not a fan of. Loved Pitch Black, not a fan of Whiteout.
Mm.
But it's got an eagle carrying a boombox, wearing
a helmet, aviator sunglasses.
Yep, flying over like I don't know Mesa, Arizona. There's a little UFO. Yeah. There's some fireworks.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Some kind of desert. I just said Mesa, Arizona.
I was going to say, maybe it's supposed to be New Mexico, Roswell.
Oh, yeah, because there's a UFO, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't want to speculate on this type of thing, Jay.
Right off the bat, the peach lemonade smells to me a little bit more like mango. I'm getting more of a mango scent off of this one.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, it's a little bit peachy, but it's that artificial peach. I think that's why it smells kind of like mango.
Yeah, but yeah, that's my initial kind of smell test. Let's give it a taste.
It's not bad. I don't think I would rank it like in my top Dews, but it's not as bad as some of the bad Dews.
You know, I think I like that one. I think I like that one a lot. I agree with you. I don't think it's, for me, it's not Distortion or Pitch Black or Voodoo 4 level, but it's certainly better than some of the bad ones we've had. Those Baja ones we had earlier this year were not very good. Oh my God,
so disappointing. It's like, why can't they make any more good Bajas?
But have you tried the Sweet Lightning from KFC?
Yes.
I was really hoping when they said peach, it was going to kind of be like that Sweet Lightning. And like that's a little more peachy than this one. This one's not as peachy as that, but I do really like this flavor.
It's not as peachy keen, one might say.
Yeah, I do kind of like that smell. Like I said, kind of mango-y, like you said, artificial peach. But yeah, solid flavor. I really do like that flavor.
Nope, I do like it. You know what it almost reminds me of? Like you took a Sprite and dumped some of that fountain peach tea from Quick Trip into it.
Ooh, yeah, maybe something like that. Or maybe went to like a Coke Freestyle.
Mm-hmm.
See if you could get like a peach Sprite or something like that.
Yeah, but it's good.
No, I think hopefully I'll be able to find the other two here soon, and we can try all three and kind of see what our thoughts are. But right now, I mean, man, it's going to take some doing to be better than this one.
I'd say like 8 out of 10 would drink again.
I would put this like solidly 8. Like if my S tier is Distortion, Pitch Black, and Voodoo 4, like this is probably solidly like an A tier drink.
Mm-hmm. Do they make, are they doing zero sugar versions or is it just the sugar this time?
I don't know. I think I've seen people saying that they're not, so I think it is just full sugar.
Because it was so weird, the Dr. Pepper coconut, they did zero, but they made so little of it that it's always out of stock everywhere, but I love the zero sugar version a lot more than the sugar one.
It's Sammy Hain, who's the person who breaks the Monster cereal news every year, posted a thing about how, like, the Mountain Dew's biggest flaw is that there's not enough zero sugar of their specialty flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And so which I think was in response to this. So it probably means there's not zero sugar of any of the red, white, and blue ones.
Disappointing, but it was still good.
No, I think it's pretty tasty. I'm not going to go out and buy a fuck ton of it, but if I'm pulling up to a gas station, I'm kind of fancying a Mountain Dew. If I see this one, I'll probably get it.
No, I agree.
Yeah. 8 out of 10, A tier kind of.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's, if you want to get in touch with us, tell us about, where to find Red, White, and Blue, Mountain Dew. Tell us that you thought Silent Night was boring.
Oh, Jay, this movie was bloody boring. It didn't have nothing funny in it. Nothing happened.
If you want to do any of those things, get in touch with us on our email, set a segment for Garbage Day, horrorfortheholidays@gmail.com, or get in touch with us on social media, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads, TikTok, X,
all the things,
@horror4holidays, horror4holidays.
YouTube.com/horrorfortheholidays. Subscribe, hit the bell, which is the actual subscribe button for some reason.
You have a thumbs up.
Yes, leave us comments, have a discussion with us about why you think this movie is dumb and stupid and long and lame and boring.
Go back to the Bikini Bloodbath Christmas episode and defend my honor.
Yeah, defend Jay's honor, because there's some kind of anti-Jay hate campaign going on in the comments. I don't know who started it.
Spencer.
Yeah, probably Spencer. He's always hated Jay. We talk privately about how much he hates Jay.
I can see it. What's the other thing? Oh, yeah, your podcatcher of choice, 5 stars, especially if it's a bad review about how we're misleading the public about the gas.
Yes. Yes. The gas is healthy. Breathe it in.
Yep. Breathe it in and put bleach in your butthole.
And as always, buy our supplements. Buy the bone broth. Buy the immunosupport. Buy the hair regrowth serum, which totally works. Look at my luscious locks.
Look at my before and after picture where I'm just redder but look exactly the same.
Ah, tastes like Ovaltine. All right.
Well. Sorry, I was taking another drink of Mountain Dew. Also, tell a friend.
Yeah, that actually helps.
I think that's the most important thing. Yeah, we've gotten more listeners, I think, by just people we know kind of getting involved and kind of passing word on to other people. And I think I'd appreciate that. And I think, you know, if a friend reached out to me, hey, I really like this podcast, I think you'd enjoy it. I've found podcasts that way.
Yes, I have. I found a couple podcasts that way by listening to Jay talk about podcasts he listens to.
Your word means more to a friend than some 5-star review on a podcatcher.
Indeed.
We just want to boost the algorithm so more people at least know we exist.
Yeah, that does help grow the show if people know we exist.
But yeah, otherwise, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week with some kind of stocking stuff or nonsense. And then 2 weeks with another mainline episode.
Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Goodbye.